This podcast is brought to you by NetBank. Whether you're thinking of franchising your business, buying into or revamping your franchise, stay tuned for tips on how to grow your brand and portfolio.
Welcome to another episode of NetBank Franchising Podcast. I'm Charles Schwinn. Today we have Sebastian Schneider, the General Manager of Motherland Coffee. Sebastian, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sebastian, I must say that I'm extremely excited because I'm not ashamed to say it, but I am a coffee addict myself. And I've been to the Motherland Coffee, the one in Rosebank, and I ordered a nice and strong Americano. I was very, very satisfied that day.
That's super good to hear. We obviously pride ourselves on our coffee, and it's always good to meet another Motherland fan.
So I got to ask, there's so many coffee shops. As you know, there's so many coffee shops, there's so many different brands. Why did you start another coffee brand? Tell us why.
Charles, you know, this is now going back almost 10 years ago. At the time, I suppose, if you think about it, everyone has some sort of affinity to coffee, whether you just love drinking it, the mystery around it, or if you love going to cafes. Everyone has a passion for coffee. And the business idea came around of it. Probably started off with a little bit of naivety about retail as well, which worked in our favor at the time. But basically a real passion for coffee and a realization that at that point in time, there were very few retail, high street, African origin coffee brands. There were a lot of European cafes, American orientated cafes, but nothing that really heroed African origin coffees, which the founders, myself included, were just really big fans of. And that's where the idea kind of was birthed.
And I remember, if I'm not mistaken, there are three of you, right? There's you, there's Rob, and there's your sister Kirsten, the three founders. And obviously later on you guys took on other members, is that right?
100% correct. So at the time, we were very close. We stayed in very close proximity. Rob and Kirsten had just gone on a world trip, and obviously just been to a lot of coffee houses around the world, from Asia to the US, Australia. I was at the time in branding and advertising, and very much involved in the developing sort of creative and the African and specifically Johannesburg creative scene, and that was the point where we kind of came together and this idea for Motherland began.
Okay, and then how long did you guys plan for? Because sometimes people plan for years, sometimes it was a spur of a moment, sometimes people get this light bulb moment in the shower. Did you guys sit down and plan and just take us through the process? How long did it take from ideal to concept to say, okay guys, let's do this?
So I suppose there was a lot of chat, and then from the point of okay, let's do this to opening doors of an establishment was about 10 months to a year. So a lot of development. I mean, obviously you just start with the thought, African coffee, let's get it to people, let's do something world class, something that's stands out as a brand, and then the hard work starts, you know, not just building the brand and the business, but suppliers, where do you get product from, what is the operational systems, you know, finding a location. I mean, we're a retail high street brand, you know, when you're, you know, finding your first location when you don't have any track record as a retailer is often quite difficult as well. So all these different things. It took about 10 months, and that's when we opened our doors for the first time in Rosebank.
Okay, and then during this 10 months, did the three of you say, okay, we're gonna save a portion of our salary every month as a seed money, or did you look for outside investors, or did you guys just went, you know what, let's just pulling our savings and let's go all in?
So it was a combination. It was a combination of some investment, some sweat equity. At the time, we had one outside investor from Hong Kong, who was also an old friend who invested some money. Rob and Kirsten, they also had a business at the time which was operating, which made some investment. So it was a combination of everyone sort of keep your jobs while we do this, put in sweat equity, put in some equity, as well as one outside investor, and a big mix of things to kind of get this thing going.
And the Motherland Coffee, tell us, how did you get that name?
Motherland, obviously for us, Motherland, the word Motherland refers to Africa, the Motherland. we, you know, as I've mentioned in the conversation, the foundation of why we did this was to really represent African coffee on the world stage. Now it's well known. Africa is the birthplace of coffee. Ethiopia was the founding origin of all coffees around the world. Every coffee essentially that's grown around the world originally comes from Ethiopia. But there's so many other African origins producing unbelievable coffees. But the story of coffee, specifically of like retail and high streets and you know, household name brand coffee from cafes to bags of coffee is not African. That story doesn't belong to us. Definitely didn't at the time, and that was our aim to change that. So we kicked around a lot of names. The Motherland was, funny enough, the first one we mentioned, but it just felt right. It feels warm. It feels welcoming. It feels big, and it just felt like the perfect fit for us.
Great. And I believe the first store opened up in Rosebank at 2010. So can you just tell us, leading up to the store opening, how did you get the word out there? How did you create some kind of hype? Or were you guys expecting to let it grow organically and whoever's walking past will see it?
No. I mean, there was a lot of groundwork at the time. You know, obviously, I think as any starting out entrepreneur, as it goes with everyone, friends and families are... our marketing point, starting point number one. You know, we started with friends, we started with family, we built the community from there, and then obviously that's prior to opening. You know, what we do is we'd sort of have tasting evenings and cupping evenings and menu test evenings and you know, check the brand with people. And you know, as I say, we all kept the jobs that we had. I was very much involved in the advertising industry and got it out into that community. So by the time we opened, we didn't have thousands and thousands of followers, but we had a group of people who were sort of invested in our success, in the success of this, what it was, one cafe at the time. And then at least when we opened our doors, we had people who were already kind of backing us. And obviously the product, the coffee we produced, the food we produced, the experience had to match up to the talk. And thankfully it did. But that essentially was the base which we could launch off. As well as at the time, you know, we did a lot of social media, marketing and that kind of thing. It wasn't as, you couldn't sort of, at the time, it wasn't as easy, let me just say, to reach a mass market as quickly as you can now. But social media was also a big part of what we did back then.
Mm. So you mentioned you were reaching out to your networks and the people around you, friends and family. Now, were there anything that during the tasting, that something that they said, the feedback wise, that you guys went, you know what, that's a brilliant idea, let's implement it. Anything that stands out?
You know, nothing in particular, but it does, especially when you, I think in those early days, you know, now it's easy. You test something, you put it in 10 stores, you're like, wow, people love this over here. They don't like it over here. Oh, this is going well. That's not going well. It's easy to just monitor the data and monitor the trajectories. But when you're starting out and you're in development, it's really hard to know if what you think is amazing is amazing, or if it's just you backing yourself, you know. So I think it helped, you know, there was not one particular thing, but it helped to know what was resonating with people, you know, and what wasn't. So it can't say that was like, wow, you know, this one thing, that's what people loved. But it's definitely a mix of a few different things. I suppose, as an example, at the time, this was 10 years ago, you know, we had three coffee sizes. We had, you know, you got the short, the tall, and what we call the mother cupper. And at the time, we said, hey guys, what do you think about this? We weren't sure. We were like, flip, are people going to freak out? Is it going to be good? And the feedback was mixed. Some people were like, no, guys, you cannot do that. No way. Other people were like, oh man, that's awesome. We love that. And we were like, you know what? Let's go with it. We want to be edgy. We want to have fun as well with what we do. So let's do it. And it actually turned out to be a big hit in the end, and it became a bit of a cult thing for us. So sometimes, you know, you get the feedback, but the feedback isn't necessarily like the holy grail. That's what we did learn. I can say that.
Mm-hmm. So are you referring to the name, instead of calling it a grande, you're naming a mother cuppa? Are you referring to that?
A mother cuppa, exactly. That's what I'm referring to, exactly.
when you said that, it made me smile because it's different.
100%. It was something different. It was something cheeky and a little bit on the edge, but at the time it felt on the edge, but once we launched it, it felt really natural and we really enjoyed it.
And then tell me, look, because I've spoken to so many business owners, franchise owners by now, that it's a lot of hard work. Can you just walk us through, because you're opening in Rosebank Mall, so which is 7 days a week, public holidays, when people perhaps are resting, you are working weekends. Can you just take us through, I mean, was first year the hardest or the first 3 year the hardest? And when did you actually stop working 7 days a week? Or do you still work 7 days a week?
Yeah, it's interesting. We don't work, essentially you don't have to work in the same way, I don't think. Obviously in those early days, it's just everything's on you. What we did have was we had team. It wasn't a single entrepreneur who's just going it alone. Sometimes, you know, you want to do it all yourself, but we could sort of pass the baton when someone ran completely out of steam. You know, we had myself and my brother-in-law would essentially bounce off who had to take the lead, because he had started a business before, not a 7 day, 365 days a year retail operation, which is a challenge. And yeah, that first year is extremely difficult. The first three are extremely difficult, and you just also don't realize the quantity of what has to be done. So now, yes, of course, you know, you work on the weekends, but it's not because you necessarily have to go and run the till in the store. You're obviously doing a different array of duties. I think a thing on workplace stamina, I did definitely learn a new workplace stamina, getting into sort of taking ownership of a retail hospitality business. You just realize that your grit and your perseverance, you had some grit and perseverance that you didn't have before, and that definitely does come only when you get out there and do it.
I'm glad you mentioned that grit, because it's not smooth sailing. I'm a business owner myself, and I went through fatigue. There were times that I wanted to quit and stop. Did that ever cross your mind in the first 3 years?
In the first 3 years, sure. I mean, it's hard to put exact dates on it, but there were times. I think I briefly mentioned before we were able to pass the baton here and there. I remember at one point I was, you're not making good money, if any money, for the first year or the first few years, especially if there's a few of you who are partners in the business. And at one point, I think it was 2 or 3 years in, I was like, look, I'm sorry, I've just got to go and commit to something else for a little while. I can't, give 90% of my time to this. It wears me down too much. And then my partner Rob was the one who forged ahead. And then for a long time he did so. And then he got to a point where he was like, look, I'm done. Like, I can't, you know, should we shift the business? Should we sell? And I was like, no, let me take over. And that wasn't because of a lack of effort. I mean, this was even when you're working, you know, heavy hours and lots of emotional as well as, your general input. You know, it's not, that's the thing I think about having your own business. You don't realize the amount of emotional input and EQ that a business requires. And that's when you need partners to help carry the load. And a lot of times, yeah, when you just feel like, flip, you know, where do we go from here? Does this go anywhere? You know, and you question maybe why you're doing it. 100%, we had a number of those days.
Okay. You know what, look, I hear you and I agree with you 100%. Now, I want to ask you just to take a step back. I mean, you mentioned grit a few times, and it sounds like you come from a close-knit family. So growing up, were your parents, were they business owners? If they were, or if they still are, was business ever discussed at the dinner table?
Yes, absolutely. We did grow up in family businesses from all sides. My partner Rob and Kirsten is my sister, and Rob's obviously my brother-in-law, just for reference for people. Rob grew up in a family where I think his father also owned his own business or was a partner in a business. He started his own business. My father as well ran a number of businesses over the years, And you know, there were points when we ran family business also in hospitality. It was B&Bs and conference centers, and I remember, you know, nights where, you know, a celebrity was doing a cooking show and they'd drop off a shirt to be washed at 11 at night to be ready for 6 a.m. the next morning, and there we were. You know, those are the kind of things we grew up with, so there was always, I think, the understanding of what it takes to do your own thing, which is interesting, because we all saw hospitality as, wow, a really difficult and challenging business. And I think we thought, well, I definitely thought to myself, sure, I don't want to go that route, because I saw what it took to make it a success. But here we are nonetheless.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I mean, if you're growing up and what you just said now, the cooking show, some celebrity finished their stuff at 11 and needs to be ready the next morning. But you went back for more after all these years. Why is that?
My father still asks me that question. it's the strangest thing. I don't know. There is something very appealing about it, and it is very satisfying when you're able to achieve things and see sort of the fruits of your labor, because it's very real time. You know, you produce something now, it's there are the people that are enjoying it, this is the community that you've created. It's very rewarding, and you can influence people, and it's a privileged space to be, actually, but it does come with a huge amount of input, and it is quite taxing. So yeah, my father actually, I mean, if we thought he worked, we worked hard. He came from a hospitality background. His father was a hotelier restaurateur. My father as well, hotelier restaurateur. And that's why he asks us to this day, you know, what are you guys doing this business where it's like the, you know, 365, almost 24 hours a day. But then again, we're all very, very passionate about it and love what we do.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That is Sebastian from Motherland Coffee. Guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, please click download or share. Sebastian, thank you again for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great to chat with you, Charles.
This podcast was brought to you by NetBank. Stay tuned for more on franchising, or search NetBank Franchising for valuable information. See money differently. NetBank.